You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. When a rebellion exploded on 12th Street in Detroit on July 23, 1967, cities all around Michigan watched as bullets flew, windows were smashed, and buildings burned. 2 days later, 51 years ago this day, it was Grand Rapids' turn. This morning, Michigan Radio's Bryce Huffman visited the area around Delaware Street Southeast and South Division Avenue, the area where it all began, and asked people walking by if they knew anything about the 1967 uprising.
No, I don't. What am
I? There was a lot of fires and stuff like that.
Honestly, no. I had no idea.
They was coming down the street and just acting a fool just like any other riot. You know, it just got out of hand.
There was a lot of bloodshed in the riots. I think that it was just a lot of people really fighting and standing up for us to actually have equal rights.
I guess it started because of the riots over there and the other places that was going on at the same time.
What happened in Grand Rapids wasn't as deadly as what happened in Detroit, but those 3 days of violence left 44 people hurt and 350 people arrested. This leads to a question that we got from listener Aaron David Werner. He's originally from Alpena, and he was a pastor at St. Luke's Lutheran Church in Grand Rapids for 6 years. Take a listen.
What is the true story of the people involved in the 1967 race riots in Grand Rapids?
So to answer that question, we spoke with two men who were there right in the middle of the Grand Rapids uprising on this date in 1967. Dan Gross was working as a probation officer at the time. And Victor Gillis, a retired Grand Rapids police captain, well, back in that summer of 67, he was working as a patrol officer. Both men joined us in May at our live show in Grand Rapids. Dan and Victor, welcome so much. Good to have you with us. Thank you. So, Dan, what do you remember about Grand Rapids in the months leading up and before the uprising? I'm wondering what people in the African-American community were feeling and some of the challenges they faced.
I can't say specifically for what they were feeling, but I know that there were concerns about what was occurring in the community. There were concerns about economic conditions, housing conditions, health conditions. All those kinds of things were at the forefront of the thoughts of people within the community.
And Victor, how did you see the city? What do you remember from that era before?
I was a new officer, a young officer, and I think initially when the trouble started that nobody thought it would leave Detroit. It would never come here. We didn't have problems here. And there was a naivete about it that it's on the east side of the state. Maybe there was reasons that occurred over here. We don't have those kind of problems. We were surprised.
So there was kind of a thank God that's not us.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
2 days later, it was.
And we were so ill-prepared for anything. There were the people who made decisions, who were in charge at the time. My suspicion today is that they felt the same way. It would never happen because when it did, we didn't have equipment. They weren't doing planning. They didn't have rosters changed. It was like a surprise, and it shouldn't have been.
When we think of the day that the uprising began in Grand Rapids, so we're talking July 25th, 1967, Dan, what do you think sparked the unrest?
Well, I've always thought of it as spontaneous combustion. There was an incident that I heard about where an officer arrested, I don't know if it's a young adult or a teenager, and they felt excessive force would be used. And from that sparked the conditions that occurred and continued to spread, and they just kind of went on and
it mushroomed from there?
Just mushroomed from there.
So in a sense, not terribly different from Detroit's blind pig raid on 12th Street.
It wasn't planned. There was no planning or people getting together said we're going to do something. It was spontaneous, and people responded. They just reacted.
And I understand you lived on Cass Street.
I lived on Cass and Pleasant.
Right in within the area. Where
in the area, I attended Central High School.
Okay. So what's the strongest, most indelible memory that you hold still from those 3 days?
Well, I was a probation officer, juvenile court, and so one of the main things I was attempting to do was making sure that the young people I was dealing with were not involved or putting themselves in a position to get arrested. And so I was out on the street and walking up and down Jefferson and things. But one of the most memorable things was there was an edict out about porch lights being off. And I guess my parents had left the porch light on and our porch light got shot out. And that was, you know, rather alarming kind of thing because I had not seen that before.
And Victor, when you think of the memories that you still hold and that are very fresh 51 years later.
Very fresh.
What are they?
Well, at the time, you got to remember this is the middle of July. It's very hot. It's a weekend. Division Avenue is busy any time of the year. This was terribly busy. And I think everybody out there, whether they're police or community, whoever, was aware of what was happening in the rest of the state. You know, and I think tensions were high to begin with. My first recollections were the fires. Actually, your spontaneous is correct because prior to any kind of physical confrontation, the fires started. There was a couple of fires on Division Avenue. Crowds grew, and out of that, the crowds became more agitated. In your sense, you can understand the reasons for, you know, the lack of opportunity and how all that plays into it. I mean,
you look back from that half century perspective and it looks different.
It looks different. But at the time, it was the fire started, the people in the community would band together in groups, then the rock throwing started, and there may have been action reaction on either side. And then within a very short time, you've got a real problem.
Let's add another voice to this. We recently spoke with Reverend Harold Morris. He was working for General Motors at the time of this 67 uprising, and let's listen to his most vivid memory of those days.
Me and my friend Fred Brown, we played basketball together, and we were on Jefferson, and I was most interested in why were they having a riot, and maybe I spoke too boldly. And then the state police asked us to leave. And we proceeded to go up from Franklin. And that's when the shots rang out. And I was shot in the shoulder. I think that the idea was of being black. That's the reason we were shot.
So Harold Morris was shot in the shoulder. His friend Fred Brown shot in the jaw. This is for both of you. What would you say the relationship was like between police in Grand Rapids and the African-American community at that time in that summer of 67? Victor?
You know, nothing jumps out at me as it being that bad. But again, take that in the context of you're a 20-year-old. I lived in the city of Grand Rapids. I went to a Grand Rapids school. I was involved in sports and other things. So all this wasn't different for me in working in the city. Of course, you realize that there are different reasons, that stuff. But I didn't think they were bad enough that this would occur. He mentioned on that short recording about the state police. That was probably a very tactical error by the city of Grand Rapids at the time.
Let's talk about that. Why? Well, calling in the state police.
Right? We were not, our staffing could not handle it. The department was quite small at the time. In fact, the department has never grown like it should have. I've been away from it for quite a while, but the staffing was inadequate to do what we had to do. And the state police sent us 100 troopers out of Detroit. You had 100 people who'd been in some real nasty situations in Detroit, and many of them, when they got here, hadn't even, you know, they'd been on duty for 30 and 40 hours, and it was a bad, they were very angry, and their response was quite heavy. I remember on Jefferson Avenue, they wrote in 5-foot letters, "Go home, state police." That's one. I don't want to blame this whole thing on them or that, but that was a tactical mistake at the time. They were very aggressive. And you can't take somebody out of a week of a terrible situation on the east side of the state and throw them into here and think it's going to be, it wasn't.
And Dan, what's your take on the relationship between police and the community?
Well, I think, as he mentioned, the state police, when they came in, it was very militaristic, and they were just shouting orders. In fact, they were the ones who shot out the lights on our porch. But I think the relationship with the police, it had shifted at one time when they used to have the Youth Commonwealth in Grand Rapids. It was on Wealthy Street. And the relationship between police officers was quite different. And I think it had moved more towards impersonal kinds of contacts with people rather than the person-to-person conflict. And, you know, I remember times when little kids would wave at a police officer and they'd turn their head and wouldn't even pay attention to them. And so it wasn't that great. And they, you know, people basically saw them as enforcement. And that was about it.
All right. Where do you think we are today?
Well, I'm not out like mm-hmm. I used mm-hmm. to be. I'm aware of some of the meetings that have been held recently in the community. And I had a colleague who's a female attorney share with me that we're still litigating or talking about stuff we were talking about 50 years ago. And so they have not viewed a great deal of improvement in terms of what happened, and come with a couple of incidents that happened with, you know, the four young kids mm-hmm. who were, guns were pointed out, and the little girl who was put in handcuffs. And so I think those kinds of things tend to ring out and cast some doubts about the relationship.
Vic, did you see things evolve through your career? I know you're retired now, but through your years and
you know, after the incidents in the 60s, my own feelings were it declined. The relationship probably declined, maybe for 8 or 10 or 12 years. And then I think it started, it's a long curve, so I'll quote somebody. It's a long curve, and I think it has gone better since. Is it perfect? I'm not that foolish to say that. And will there be problems, and are there going to be conflicts and differences of opinion but I think it's better. I think it's better, particularly in the last probably 20-something years. I think there's more of a realization what I mean, you're going to get someplace eventually, and you've got to start realizing that there are reasons things happen. There has to be some kind of meeting of each other and what you think and how you treat one another.
We should certainly strive to learn from history. Do you think that has happened in Grand Rapids?
I think it somewhat. I'm a lover of history, and I think there's a real dearth of knowledge in terms of history of our country. And I don't see people really expanding their knowledge in terms of what happens or the kinds of events that have happened in our country for them to have the understanding. You know, I still think about the Kerner Commission report, that the cause of problems was white racism and some of the interactions between the police. And so, you know, the Kerner Commission report was a fine document, but people have not embraced it and have not grown with it.
Final thought from you, Vic. Have we learned from history?
Yes, we have. And I think things will. Are they perfect? No. Will they improve? I do believe so. I'm an optimist. And yes, I do. I think we improve all year after year. Too bad we can't impart our wisdom on 25-year-olds. But we can't. I mean, I think of things a whole lot different today than I did 15 or 20 years ago. And I understand things I didn't take the time to understand. Yeah, they'll do better.
Well, there we go. We want to thank you so much, Dan Gross. Victor Gillis, thank you so much for being with us on Stateside and sharing your memories of that summer of 67. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.